Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The curse dooms our home. Black rot eats our flesh. And bloodlust consumes every soul. Salvation lies in the forsaken lands. Its foul behemoths are the source of our affliction. Be our light in the dark.
Hey everybody, we are so excited to be doing another VR-focused piece of bonus content for everybody. Today we are chatting with Sean Kittleston, who is the Senior Vice President Creative for Skydance Interactive, leading the studio's art, animation, audio design, and narrative teams on games like Skydance's Behemoth. He's also a friend of ours. I have his incredible comic, the bound edition of Heart Attack, right next to me, signed by Mr. Kittleston. We are friends in real life, so if you hear some bias coming through, it's probably because I think Sean is one of the most brilliant people to have worked in comics and now in games, and we are very appreciative of him taking time here to chat with us. Sean, before we dive in, how are you doing?
Well, right now I'm wiping the tears away because I didn't know you felt that way, Christian. Jesus. I'm doing really good. It's funny. Last year I was a guest on the podcast for my birthday, and yesterday was my birthday. So here I am again.
Happy birthday!
It's an annual tradition that we're making here.
I was just hoping you'd come back a little wiser. That's why we wait. You know, it's like, oh, we gotta let him age up a little bit, like a fine wine.
I think I'm a little bit wiser after the past year. I've learned a lot, so a lot coming together.
Jeff and I, we've talked about Behemoth on the main show already. I believe you listened to that. Certainly, it's not required listening for this conversation, but I think you kind of heard our initial takes. Since then, you all have released a couple of updates. One big patch that changed a decent amount of stuff in the terms of the game's combat, which we'll dive into. But where I want to start, Sean, is I talked about this on the main show. Behemoth feels like a very ambitious VR game in the sense that it has you outside in these big vistas where you can have this view distance that is, you know, miles and miles and miles away, progressing toward this huge monster, you know, as you take down these behemoths as you progress through the story. And so many of the narrative-based VR titles that we see are often constrained to a subway, a hallway, a basement, a mansion. And I'm curious the decision where you all set out to make this open-vistaed approach to a narrative VR game.
Well, much like the Marquis de Sade, we like pain. It was a conscious decision on the studio's part to get into a larger environment than, like, when you look at Saints and Sinners, Walking Dead Saints and Sinners, New Orleans isn't known for, like, skyscrapers, right? It's not the sprawling Chicago or New York style metropolis. It's a city on a smaller scale. There's a maximum height to buildings of sorts, and the streets themselves they're not giant freeways. They're tight. They're constricted, and you find yourself in all of these tight spaces, you know, creeping under floorboards and going through cramped rooms and hallways where if a walker jumps out at you, you're going to get a great scare. And Skydance's Behemoth was this response to that experience of, wow, intimate spaces work really well in VR, but so does scale. So how far can we push scale? And we knew we wanted to push scale with the giant boss fights, but we also knew that those giant boss fights were going to be the most challenging aspect of development. We could not have one every 5 minutes, right? That would have been a way more expensive and even more wildly ambitious game. So were we going to limit our moments of scale to those giant boss fights, or did we want to create a world that felt like giant behemoths could live in it? So it felt like it was a necessity, right, to really live up to the theme of epic grimdark fantasy, to do something different than a dungeon crawler. We wanted to do like a mountain crawler. And even our more dungeon style areas are like caverns. And you know, there's a castle zone towards the end of the game that even that has some fairly large rooms and big towering spaces that with lots of verticality. So we set ourselves up for it from a thematic standpoint. And then from a technical standpoint, there is absolutely a reason why most VR games take place in corridors. It's really, really difficult. And we made it extra difficult for ourselves because no one tells you, like, there's no one at Meta or Sony who's like, you absolutely have to run this game at a native frame rate. Meta has ASW, Asynchronous Space Warp. Sony has plenty of opportunities for reprojection. So we could have run the game at 32 frames per second and then upscaled it to 72 or 90 hertz. But that just didn't yield the kind of flow that we were looking for, the kind of motion, the kind of smooth input that we really wanted. We knew that the physics of the game, if you wanted to feel that weight, there's just a certain responsiveness that you have to get out of your hands and that you have to be able to feel. Otherwise, it starts to feel too slow. It feels soupy, is I guess the best way to put it, where you have artificial weight and you have this lag, incremental lag created by reprojection. So it's just not going to feel good. So we're like, okay, how can we make this game as difficult as possible to finish? Let's run it native on all platforms.
And you mean finish for you all, not for the player to finish.
Yes. Yeah. How can we actually launch this game and make it super duper challenging? Let's run it native frame rates. Let's have the exact same gameplay on every platform from Quest 2 to PS5 and BVGP PCs. And let's do all of that with the most expansive environments with really far draw distances. And let's not use billboards and static images. Let's make all of those environments 3D. That was hard. But I do think it's worth it, right? That first opening vista that you come out on, you start the game in a blizzard, and then you come out onto a mountaintop, and the snow storm blows off and your vision clears and you can see this just beautiful expanse of land with a giant behemoth skeleton off in the distance. And I think you immediately get the sense of scale that we wanted to bring to the game. And we tried to keep that going so that in every level of the game, every environment, you get that sense of epic scale. At several points, not just when you're fighting the behemoths, but in the spaces in between. So you have these moments of human scale, action and contact with human enemies, and then you get to come out and experience these really incredible and beautiful environments. It was extremely difficult to achieve, and I think the hardest thing to finish visually was getting to reduce as much pop in as possible. Mm. There were so many ways that we did that, but a lot of it was you would go in and find an area of the game with pop in, and just, we had to make bug notes. We were constantly playing the game annotating video capture of our playthroughs, handing that off to the environment art team, and they were going in and fixing what's called pre-computed visibility volumes, which are areas of the game that trigger what's going to be rendered, what can be seen from that viewpoint. And we have different ones for every platform.
I'd love to pause there and follow this thread a little bit, because I think one thing that I find interesting, and as a not developer, and I imagine our listeners would be interested in as well, is the specifics of developing for VR. Because when you say from that viewpoint in a flat screen game, I think that's kind of easier to handle.
Yeah.
But in VR, how do you know what my viewpoint is at any given time? I mean, yeah, sometimes I'm in a corner and I have a, 270 degree point of view or whatever it is, but you never take the camera out of the player's perspective. So is it a 360 viewpoint at all times that has to be able to render that scene, or are you limiting based on, where the headset is positioned and then trying to guess how quickly I whip my head around to the back? I'm curious, like, those specifics.
Yes. Yeah, so the way it works is there's a layer in the environment that determines if you were to look in 360 degrees in any direction, and it's 360 degrees for the X and Y axis, right? Because you can look up and down. So you can conceivably look anywhere. The restrictions that you would have on a camera in a third person game don't exist. So you have to account for that full global view from that point of space. The difficult thing that we ran into is all of those volumes are typically configured for where a player character can walk and traverse. And you can fling yourself through the air with the grapple hook. So we had to test aggressively all of the different ways that you could fling yourself around and the different speeds at which you could fling yourself around, because we are streaming in the environment at all times and determining what aspects of the environment needed to be streamed in depending on where you were, particularly if you were off the ground, was incredibly difficult. It required a lot of testing and a lot of just constant updating and nonstop vigilance of, hey, did we lose the volume here? Did we jump off the ground and then create this huge moment of pop-in? Because if you were to climb a wall versus grapple over it, if you climbed the wall, you would have a point of contact on ground at all times and everything would render in exactly when it needed to. If you suddenly grappled over it at speed, especially because we kept adjusting the speed of the grappling reel for maximum impact, it would change everything and we would have to go in and fix it again and again and again. And eventually it got hammered into a place where it felt really solid, but that's something I think we're going to continue to work on, because we're still finding new ways for players to fling themselves into different positions and bypass the visibility volumes that are there.
You mentioned the updates and patches and iteration. And one of those big updates that came out on December 12th included changes to the combat. And Jeff, I know that was one area where you had some nits or some gripes with the game as released. So Jeff, I'd love to hand it off to you and kind of get your thoughts and questions, and hopefully we can get into some of those.
Oh, you're interviewing me now, Christian? Oh, I get it.
Passing you the microphone, Jeff.
Yeah, no, I
Oh, we been... lost Jeff. Back to me. Okay, anyway.
I've been very impressed with how much more fun I've been having post-patch, specifically with regard to, not having stamina be depleted as quickly and having some of that balance, I think, feel more to what I would expect in the game. Obviously this is subjective in my own personal experience, but I really thought that patch improved my level of fun quite a bit. And I can imagine that balancing in VR presents its own challenges. And I'm curious, I think it seems to me that Skydance is now one of the top tier VR developers. You've kind of had this track record that puts you in that rarefied air. And we're in this interesting place now with VR where you know, at the end of the year and end of 2024, we've got, you know, Batman and Behemoth and Alien and Metro. It's like a bunch of these really big, meaty, full games that aren't, you know, that aren't Beat Saber or, you know, Pistol Whip. They feel more like full experiences that people would expect from a, you know, a big AAA game.
Mm-hmm.
Can you speak to like where we are now with VR from your perspective? Like what is the state of VR? It feels like you're at that, in that place where you have a unique perspective on the potential for VR and where the VR landscape is. You can talk about, you know, balancing for VR and where VR is in total.
Yeah. Well, balancing for VR, it's so incredibly challenging. There is no amount of testing that you can do that is enough testing. I think the thing that always stings me is when I see impressions in the community of like, did they not test this game? and then it's also like my head spins sometimes reading impressions or hearing impressions of the game, because on the one hand, you'll have someone be like, this game is exactly how I want it to feel. It's the best VR game of the year for me. This is an 8 out of 10 or a 9 out of 10. And then you have someone say like, why is there even stamina here? This makes me, I just feel like I should be able to swing. And I love you, Jeff, for being, for everyone. Like, I love Jeff Cannata so much that the more he vented and ranted about the stamina of the game, the more I was like, oh, I'm going to get him. I'm going to get him with this patch.
I'm surprised the freestyle mode isn't called the Kanata mode.
Well, it's funny. There was actually we had spirited debates on the team about stamina and about how to message stamina to players, and the range of opinions that I've seen outside of the studio now from the player base, it reflects the difficulty of balancing for VR, which is when you press a button in a traditional flat game, you get this, the player character on screen does the same thing for everyone.
Right.
When they press that button.
Right.
If you press X or you press A, you're going to get that action out of it. There's only one way to do a heavy strike or a light strike in a game. In VR, well, what angle of attack is someone using? What speed are they coming in at? What arc of motion have they put into that? How much follow through do they have? How much did they draw back? Where are they standing or are they sitting? Are they left-handed or are they right-handed? What kind of day did they have? Did they eat enough carbs?
Right. Yeah. And it's a much more personal experience in VR, I would argue, because I'm doing it, right? I'm standing there embodying the character in a way that you just can't holding a controller.
Yeah. It's the same thing. You know, like there are people who really love roller coasters, and then there are people who really love dark rides, and then there are people who hate theme parks. And it's when you put someone's body into a situation and you ask them to physically manipulate or be physically manipulated in space, it's going to yield so many different results. There are still people out there who, despite all of the advances in the tech and the stability and frame rate that we have now and the clarity of graphics and the fidelity of graphics, there are still people who get motion sick.
Mm-hmm.
Or who fear getting motion sick. And then there are people who get motion sick, but kind of accept it as the price of admission and then learn to overcome motion sickness, right? I think I even had that. I remember playing with the Rift DK1 back in 2013 or 2012-ish. And the first time that I played modern VR that wasn't like the Virtual Boy was, you know, sitting with the DK1 on a PC using an Xbox 360 controller and playing Half-Life and getting so violently ill that even though I was just mesmerized by the sights, I took the headset off and I couldn't get up out of the chair, and I had someone had to go get me a bag, and I was like breathing in and out of the bag with my head between my knees. And then 2 hours later, I was driving home and I got like hit with a second wave of motion sickness, and I had to pull off to the side of the road and just chill for like 30 minutes. And I think I was listening to like Run the Jewels or something. Just, like, get my head back in the game. Come on, man. What would Killer Mike do right now? And that's still the case for some people. Like you can overcome it. I had never felt that sick again in VR. I really think it was my brain just freaking out over a new experience of motion and immersion. And now that I've got all those legs, I can go into pretty much any VR game, and I've never gotten motion sick from VR. You know what gets me motion sick? The Resident Evil engine on a flat screen with motion blur on.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, if I turn off motion blur and chromatic aberration on the RE engine games, I'm okay. The minute I turn it back on, I've got maybe 20 minutes before I feel terrible. So it's all so subjective, and tuning for that is incredibly difficult. But I think the really important thing for any VR studio to do, and part of that state of where we're at in VR, is we need to take more swings and be more experimental if we want VR to be relevant.
Yeah.
That's something that I think Arkham Shadow did really, really well. And like Camouflage, they're friends of ours. We love those guys. It's not a competitive thing in the VR space. Like we're all rooting for each other, because we know that if someone comes in, and whether they love Behemoth or they love Batman, if they love one VR game, there's a good chance they'll love another one. Yeah. So we are all rooting for each other to succeed and to grow the audience for this thing. But we have to take risks, because if all VR is another way to experience flat gameplay, it's not differentiated enough. We have to give players something that they're not getting anywhere else. And that's why, like, this game, Skylines of Behemoth, is not Shadow of the Colossus in VR, nor is it Dark Souls in VR. It is a fundamentally different experience from both of those. It draws inspiration from both of those, but it's fundamentally different. It's built with very different considerations. It's built for a range of different technical considerations. And now it's being built post-launch. It's being patched and tuned to respond to all of the different ways that players are playing the game and the feedback that we're getting from them. Because like I said, when we test the game internally, we do user research with platforms like Meta or Sony. We work with third-party consulting groups. We take the game to trade shows like Gamescom. At Gamescom, we had like 800 demos between the floor demos and then private press demos over the course of 4 days. All of that data pales in comparison to tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of players getting into a game.
Yeah.
There's just no, it's like the whole spectrum of humanity is going to come in, and they're going to come back with a range of feedback that includes finding bugs that no one's ever seen. And that includes behavioral responses that no one's ever seen. And we set ourselves up for the most difficult task, I think, because there are not a lot of prescribed motions in the game.
Right.
It's very freeform. Like the freestyle mode makes it even more freeform, because you can keep on swinging and there's no limitation. But in terms of how you swing, what weapon you swing, where you use the grappling hook, it's, you know, there are set points to grapple to, but you can also grapple any object. You can grapple any enemy, and even the set points that you can grapple to, you can grapple anywhere along a range and an area of those points. So we made it really hard for ourselves, But we did that on purpose because we wanted to create the reward of the player feeling like they were in maximum control and they could craft their own play style. And now what we're learning through the community and what we're trying to evoke with these patches is the sense that the players can tailor their experience to the way that they want it, because there are some people who feel like, again, it makes me dizzy if I pay too much attention to public comments, because there's some people that are like, game is too hard, even on Tenderfoot. And I'm like, all right, I'll make a Tenderfoot even easier. But then you get people who are like, game is not hard enough, even on Barbarian. And I'm like, you sick puppy. Barbarian mode was like created in a way as a response to myself and some of the other like super hardcore players at the studio who are like, we've put our couple of hundred hours into this and it's getting too easy. Make it harder for us again. Come on, team. And they're like, all right, here comes Barbarian mode. You're gonna get killed in one or two hits. And I was like, thank you. But I don't want anything harder than Barbarian mode for me personally. And yet there are players out there that are like, I could do with harder than hard. So I feel like, I don't know what if we're going to be able to do it, but for next year, there's definitely conversations going like, what's beyond Barbarian in terms of difficulty? Amazing. Like, are there like modes where if you die, there's literally no respawn?
A hardcore, truly hardcore mode. Yeah.
Super hardcore, like true to life, like turn off all the UI and just say, okay, go. And if you die, you dead. That's cool. Maybe people want that, but I think other things that people want are probably going to be more along the terms of ease of use and quality of life improvements to make it ever more accessible to a wider swath of players. And that's definitely the biggest difference between this game and something like a Blade and Sorcery or a Legendary Tales, where those are great games. They have their own styles of freeform physics-based combat, but we are definitely trying to play to the widest possible. We're trying to be a big tent game for VR where anyone can come in and enjoy the spectacle of it. And if they have not just experiential limitations to their gameplay, but also if they have like physical limitations and physical disabilities, we want them to be able to enjoy the game as well. That's should not be a barrier to entry insofar as long as you can wield the motion controllers, you should be able to play this game. So that's the tuning part. I know I'm giving really, I told you guys I'd give you some long answers.
Well, I want to follow up really quick before I
hand go over it. To
Christian. You mentioned two things that I think resonate for me. Of course, scale, I think it's obvious to anybody who gets into a VR headset that scale is impressive and engaging in a way in VR that it just can't be on a 2D screen. And so it's so awesome that your game embraces that. And really, I think it is kind of the defining feature of Skydance's Behemoth is just dealing with the scale. And you also mentioned, Shadow of the Colossus, which of course I think is the first thing people think of when you're taking down these enormous, skyscraper sized monsters. Can you talk about some of the design challenges in designing those behemoth battles and maybe things that you learned or things that you tried that didn't work or ways in that you found in dealing with a scale that immense inside VR?
Sure. So there's a whole bunch of things. I'll try to narrow it down to just a few. The first and most difficult question is, how big is big enough? So we had Shacklehide, the first behemoth that you fight, which has to be your starter behemoth. You're relatively new and fresh to the game. You haven't had tons of time to practice with the grappling hook. You probably know how to climb very well. Stabbing things is stabbing things. It's very intuitive. But the first draft of Shacklehide, boss was only 50% of its current size.
Oh, wow.
And that was largely a technical and performance consideration. It was, how do we make this thing work and animate and not have it clipping into the environment. We wanted it to have some AI pathing so that it would be following the player. And doing that at a higher scale, like, broke the team's brain. So the very first iteration of that was half the size. It also was a much shorter boss fight. It had, instead of the multiple phases that we have in it now, and stabbing weak points and climbing on it and fighting some rotters that might come out in the midpoint.
And getting and then, back up after he falls on a giant spike.
Yeah.
That shocked me. I was like, he's getting back up. Go ahead.
I'm so glad you dug that, because I like that too. That was like having people pop for that moment is my favorite thing. Like, because it's such a relief. Like, oh, I got him.
Yeah.
No, I don't got him. Damn it. Like, none of that was really there. It was kind of a, you would get him on the spike, tug once, tug twice, and he went down. And it felt very anticlimactic. It felt like there was very little telling you how to get from A to B and how to kill the boss. And you would spend a lot of time just running around it. There was no climbing on the boss, because again, there were the technical concerns of climbing on the boss were exponential. But we played it and it just wasn't there, right? The spectacle wasn't there. It didn't have the pucker factor of you look up at it and your butt just goes whoop. You would go in and you would see this boss and you would say, that looks slightly larger than the trolls in Resident Evil 4. And I've seen those. So what's new here? And then the fact that it was kind of obtuse, that it wasn't clear what to do at all. There wasn't any signposting for you, especially early in the game. You would spend a lot of time trying to figure out how to kill the boss. And then as soon as you figured out, you would kill the boss and it would be over in a second. And you'd be like, well, that's never need to go back to that, because it's just a one and done. I pull him and he's down and that's it. So managing the complexity of the fight, but also balancing something that players could intuit and understand and see, oh, I see a path to fighting this boss. And then we also have things like Celia, the character who lives in your head, because you need a spiritual component to this in a grim, dark fantasy world. You can't have someone calling in on the radio, like, here's how you need to beat the boss. But we have as much signposting as possible so that players can make their way through. They can navigate, they can work with it. We upscaled the boss, like I said, from half its current size to its current size. That brought us to the pucker factor. Like the team built you would go into the same arena that you have now, and the boss would just be standing there, like, breathing. And then you would walk over to, like, a little doorway, and you would click that doorway, and then you would turn around, and the boss was now 25% larger, 50% larger, 75% larger, 100% larger. And everyone agreed, like, oh, 100% larger is obviously the way. Like, bigger is so much better. And then that scared the crap out of everyone. It's like, oh my gosh, we have to, like, re-rig, reskin, redo all the physics. We have to redo the animation. So we're doing this all over again. And it was like, yes, but this is necessary to get the effect. And then we created the different, the weak points to help set up a little bit more structure to the fight and create some pace. We wanted to have this feeling of you kind of hacking away at it slowly but surely and weakening it before you could go in for the kill. And then the last thing to come in was climbing. And climbing was so incredibly difficult, because when we talk about motion sickness,
right?
How do you keep players from getting motion sick? And it does turn out that when you have a boss that's so big that climbing on its skin is like climbing on a wall, it takes up so much of your field of view that it prevents you from getting motion sick in the same way that having a cockpit around you in a flight simulator reduces your motion sickness. Because you have the frame of reference of this wall of skin or flesh that you're hanging on to, and you can kind of look over and you can see things moving around, but you don't really get sick until you look completely away from the boss. So, like, on the Dreadstag, the giant elk type behemoth. That's the third one you face in the game. If you're standing on a platform on Dreadstag and facing Dreadstag's body, you know it's moving. If you're hanging onto its arm and it's trying to shake you off, you know that it's moving because you can see the environment moving around you. If you turn completely around on the platform and just stare off at the horizon while it's shaking you and all you're watching is the horizon with no fixed point of reference for you, that's going to make your legs jelly. It's having the fixed point of reference of this giant boss that makes it better. But there's also the problem that the entire game is a physics simulation. With real weight and momentum and everything from the player, the bosses, the weapons, they all have physical properties that have been attributed to them. So we get on the boss, and the first thing we realize is you are incredibly unstable. Like, it is a nonstop jitter fest climbing on the boss. Then we get on the boss, and we also realize that if the boss is moving at full speed, it can fling you off so hard and so fast, you can go flying out of the environment. That gets compounded with bosses like Night Scraper, bosses like Dreadstag, where you can grapple and now you're hanging onto a rope that is itself another live physics object that's being calculated. And they are flying or moving through space, and you are subject to the momentum and speed generated by the boss, the drag of the player's body and the weight of the player's body, and then the rope and the physical properties of the rope, the tension of the rope, the pendulum motion that you get on the rope.
So Sean, you were talking about the physics and the rope and all of the computations going into, yes, as the player flinging around in this space. And as I'm listening to that, I'm thinking, is it worth it?
Well, I will say, like, I think it was worth it because the spectacle of these fights, and it's something that we all talk about, it's something we're like, it's kind of the JFK, we don't go to the moon because it is easy, but because it is hard. We invoked that frequently in this game. Like, we do not climb behemoths because they are easy, but because it is hard. It was incredibly difficult. You have all those physical properties. If we had made it so that everything was canned, right? And it was, like I said, a prescribed animation, a prescribed action that, we would just say, like, okay, place hand here and then thing happens. That would have been much easier because we would have controlled everything. But it also would have been so scripted that, there's plenty of scripting in the fights as it is, in order for them to have a flow, in order for them to have a structure and a gameplay, a mechanical narrative for the player to follow. But we still wanted this sense of freeform, and there's really cool stuff that can happen. I mean, a slight spoiler alert, but for the second behemoth, you're riding a giant bat in the sky, and that bat can fling you off, and then you can need to grapple hook your way back to it. If we didn't have these dynamic systems in play, none of that would be happening. It wouldn't be anywhere near as fun and exciting. And there wouldn't be those moments where you get dropped and you do a no-look grapple
and, that's awesome,
and save yourself. Because you can't no-look grapple if there's only one or two points that are valid to grapple.
Yeah.
There are instinctual things that you can do once you have these systems built in and once the player feels comfortable and confident with their body and the way that they're using their body in the space. So it was really important to us. It felt like we set ourselves up for it and we had to live up to that. We had this CG trailer out there that had made promises to players about, like, look at you swinging around on the side of this big thing. And it was like, oh, gotta be able to do that. Can't have it in the CG trailer and not have it in the game now. Thanks, marketing. just living up to that promise and continuing to challenge ourselves. There's a really brilliant co-founder of our studio. It was formerly The Workshop and now Skydance Interactive at Skydance Games, named Dr. Peter Ackerman. And Pete Ackerman is one of the most brilliant minds in the history of games. He was a co-founder at Treyarch back in the day. He made a game called Die by the Sword that I was a massive fan of on PC back in 1998. I was a massive fan. It was a extremely high threshold or high barrier to entry game, because not only did you need a 3D card at a time when 3D cards were just becoming standard for gaming PCs, but you needed to use the entire D-pad to do the physics-based hack and slash action. And it had all the things we have in Behemoth. It had different weapons. It had different properties for those weapons. It had angles of attack that were fairly freeform. It had dynamic severing on enemies. And here we are 26 years later, launching this project with Peter that is spiritually a successor to Die by the Sword. And it has the thing that Die by the Sword always dreamed of, which was being able to use inputs that weren't limited to a gamepad or to a keyboard, but that the entire human body could be. It's literally in the instruction book for the PC version for Die by the Sword.
Wow.
There's like a letter from the team, and it's like, perhaps someday, someday, wow, there will be an input method. But until that day, we must avail ourselves of every number on the number pad. And it's like, so cool. Oh, wow, we're here. So that spirit of experimentation, even things like dynamic severing, that's not easy to do in VR. That's VR is a very performance demanding, you have to render everything twice, games, medium. Like those platforms are doing some heavy duty lifting, and we're lucky that we have things like dynamic foveated rendering on PlayStation VR 2, because they enable us to take all the effects that you get on your beefy GP PC and put them on the PS5. But we also are getting this to work on mobile hardware on Quest 2 and Quest 3 and run performant, run native. And yeah, we might turn off a lot of those graphical effects, but we still want you to be able to cut those bodies in half. And we still want you to be able to fling yourself off that behemoth. And when it happens, it should happen in a way that doesn't feel completely chaotic and maddening. It should have some sense of control. So we're constantly trying to control the chaos, and I'm glad that we did. I think I would rather work on games that take really big risks and don't play it safe, because I think, bring it back to your question about the state of VR, Jeff, that's what we need to do. We need to take these risks. We need to make games that we don't want to make the player sick, but I am comfortable making the player uncomfortable so that they can find their way back to comfort. And then in that, find mastery and satisfaction in the same way that you find satisfaction when you move from easy to normal to expert in Beat Saber. The same way that you find satisfaction when you learn to ride a bike or swing a baseball bat or swing a golf club or anything that you do physically in real life, learn to draw. Like there's beauty in using the human body to do very cool and specific things that we practice. So that's VR, but it requires just a whole other level of testing and patience that you don't have to deal with in flat games. And it requires the patience as a dev to say, we're going to put this game out. It's the best thing we can make. It's been tested and tested and tested. And the community is going to have their own opinion. And we're going to stick around and support it no matter what they say. And that's the spirit that we brought to this game. And I'm super proud of the team, man. I'm getting a tattoo for this game because this team worked so hard. And I told them, like I want to get a tattoo just to commemorate my time on this game. And I'm not even the first team member to get a tattoo for making this game. Like it's awesome. A bunch of us getting tats because we have so much awesome art and we're just really, really proud of what we've accomplished and what the team has accomplished and living up to that spirit of experimentation that the studio was founded to pursue.
Yeah, I love the ambition in the game. I mentioned it on the main show. Some of my favorite moments are just, you know, inside a castle or a cavern and the light is pouring in and I see the world that exists outside that I know I'll get to go play in later. Like some of those moments are just stunning. And I love the commitment to continue to play in this, you know, big budget VR space. I feel like the back half of 2024 has been an incredible year for ambitious, big narrative VR games. And I hope that continues. And I love seeing the continued work that you all are putting in to Behemoth, a game that, you know, I think did a lot right, but I certainly had some issues with. And it's fun to see those changes coming in and impacting gameplay and letting players know that there is a world here that is going to continue and evolve with them. Man, I really appreciate your time and I really appreciate you being so open and honest with us about this game. And I can't wait to see what's next for Skydance's Behemoth and what's next for you all as a studio as well. Because as Jeff said, you know, what you guys have done so far and where this play space is going, I feel like the sky's the limit and it's really exciting to see what everybody's doing in this space. So thank you again, Sean Kittleson, for joining us, talking about Skydance's Behemoth and everything in between. And thank you, dear patrons, for making this conversation possible. We appreciate you all very much. Sean, if folks wanted to learn more about Skydance's Behemoth, where could you direct them to it and any of the other stuff you are doing in the space?
Yeah, get on the PlayStation Store, get on the Meta Horizon app, get on Steam. You could go get the game. It's out there. It's right out there right now. And you can also, I think, the website is behemothvr.com. If you're looking for the website, you can also find a fun, free graphic novel you can download in a sweet, high-resolution PDF. That gives you some sort of origin story for the game. But it is a massive, I think, high production value game in a year where we're actually seeing more than one of those. And I'm really grateful to everyone working in the VR space that we're pushing these things forward. And I'm extra grateful. This is going to sound like some corporate pandering, but real talk, like I'm grateful to be part of Skydance and part of Skydance Media, because I don't think this game would happen if I didn't work at a company founded by a stunt pilot who himself plays VR and invested in a VR studio in 2016 and has continued to support this game. Like David Ellison was a real champion for this game and for this team. So it really matters that people are believing in and backing these things. And I feel very, very lucky to be part of a team that's getting to do this work in this space. We feel like we're pioneering. How often do you get to do that?
Yeah. It shows, man. It's awesome. And like Christian said, we're grateful that we had this conversation. We're super grateful that we get to play the game and see what comes out of such a passionate studio. It's really fun.
Well, Jeff, I want your passion to never end. I want all the rants. I want all the everything. Like I want you to give it to me because I can take it. And I always am going to use it as fuel to say, we're going to go win back, Jeff.
I appreciate that, man. I you know, it comes from a place of love, and I how much I love VR and the VR space, and what you guys are doing is just so inspiring and cool. So, thanks for taking it in the spirit in which it was intended.
Hey, dude, you always say at the end of the Slash Filmcast, like you guys always say, at the end of the day, it's a miracle.
Yeah.
Like that someone made this movie. And
that's right.
I feel like, yeah, at the end of the day, it's a miracle that anyone has made a VR game. It's a miracle that we get an Arkham VR game.
Yeah.
It's a miracle that we got a Metro VR game. And it's a miracle that Skydance's Behemoth is a game that we were able to launch and that we're going to continue to improve.
It's awesome. Congratulations.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you. Talk to you soon.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.